Welcome to Porch Stories on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Sarah Hegland. Every month we invite residents of Central Iowa for a potluck and neighborly conversational storytelling. As we sit around the table and tell each other stories of our lives, we pass around the recording microphone so we can share them with you on the radio. So sit back, enjoy something to drink, and imagine you've joined us. The theme of this evening's show is seeing you. Listen to the laughter and the joy of conversational storytelling. We are your neighbors.
Belinda Hagen Merritt was last seen on a stage as Babe in the Actors Dinner Theater production of The Queen of Bingo this last February. So welcome, Belinda.
Well, I grew up here in Ames, and I think I had a fairly normal childhood. But sometime around the age of 5 or 6, I began to see things that other people couldn't see. Now, my parents explained this as being, you know, the result of an overactive imagination. But to me, these things that I saw were just as real as you are sitting here tonight. The first occurrence I remember was when I was supposed to be sleeping at night, and I opened my eyes to see a very old man standing in the shadows in my bedroom. He noticed that I was looking at him, and he looked at me and said, "Go get your mom, hurry." Well, I was brought up to do what I was told, so I ran out to the kitchen and got my mother, and I told her there was a man in my bedroom who needed to talk to her. Well, of course, my mother was very taken aback by this, and she started asking me, you know, a flood of questions. You know, what did he look like? How old was he? What did he sound like? Well, when I finally got her to follow me to my bedroom, the old man had left, and my mother just told me I must have had a dream, that I was just imagining things again. But a few days later, I heard my mom talking to one of our neighbors, and she was telling her friend that she, after thinking about it, thought that maybe the old man had been her grandfather, who had recently passed away, and that maybe he'd stopped by to say goodbye, and it was her fault that he got tired of waiting and left. Another day, it was a beautiful, sunny, warm summer's day, and I was alone in the yard. I'd filled my wagon with sand, and I think I was taking it down to the garden. I looked up, and there was another little girl standing beside me, only she was much older. She was probably around 10, and she was much taller than I was. Well, she said, "Hello." And I said, "Well, I didn't see you. Where did you come from?" Well, the girl looked at me very knowingly, and she said, "Oh, I've been here for a while. You just didn't see me." Well, we got to visiting, and I asked her where she came from. Well, she told me her name was Mary, and that she and her folks had come out from Ohio in a covered wagon. Well, I was 5 years old, and I'd never heard of a covered wagon. The only wagons I knew about were like my little red wagon. So I asked her what that was. Well, Mary very patiently explained to me that a covered wagon is kind of like a house on wheels. You can put your furniture in it, and you can live in it. Well, that didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but I'd also noticed that she was dressed rather unseasonably for a summer's day. She was wearing a long-sleeved dress and an apron and the most unusual hat that I'd ever seen. So I asked her about her hat, and she said, "Oh, that's just an old sunbonnet," like it was nothing. Well, Mary decided that she needed to leave because her parents would be looking for her, and they might be worried. So I said, "Well, bye," you know, like kids do, "see ya." Well, I bent down to my wagon again, and when I looked up, she was gone. And I had no idea where she went, and I never saw her again. Well, I told my mother about Mary, and of course it was attributed to an overactive imagination again. But several days later, I heard my mother telling my grandmother about Mary, what I told her. And neither one of them could could understand how I'd heard about covered wagons at such an early age, because there hadn't been any covered wagons around Ames for maybe 100 years. And I find that to be a very good question myself. Usually when I saw these people who appeared out of nowhere, I wasn't afraid of them. I never felt like I was in any kind of danger. But then there came that night. I was supposed to be sleeping again, and I opened my eyes to see a small pool of light on my bedroom floor, and there was a human figure standing there. It was dressed in blue jeans and a white turtleneck, and I remember red tennis shoes. Also, it was wearing a kind of a hat that looked like a baseball cap, only the brim was turned back. Well, then I noticed the horrible face. The face was so disfigured and distorted and red. The lips were protruding, and they were bright, bright red, and it appeared to be some kind of a monster. Well, I screamed, "Ah! Mommy, there's something in my room!" Well, my mother came running, and she said, "Well, what is it?" And I said, "I don't know." And she said, "Well, ask it what it is." So I looked at the creature, and I said, "What are you?" Well, the creature said rather indignantly, "I'm a boy." Well, I told my mother, I said, it says it's a boy. And my mother said, "Well, ask it what its name is." So I said, "What's your name?" And the creature said, "Jimmy." And I said, "Mommy, his name is Jimmy." And she said, "Well, not your cousin Jimmy." And I said, no, he doesn't look like my cousin Jimmy at all. And my mom said, "Well, ask him what he's doing here." So I asked the boy, I said, "What are you doing here?" And he said, "Well, it was getting dark outside, and I was feeling alone. I was frightened, so I came in here." Also, I looked at my mother, and I said, "Well, he said that he was frightened because it's dark outside, and he was alone." And my mother thought a minute, and she said, "Ask him if he's dead." So I said, "Jimmy, are you dead?" And he said, "I think so." So I said, "Mommy, he thinks he's dead." And she said, "Well, ask him what happened to him." So I asked him, "What happened to you?" And he said, "I got hit in the face by a baseball." Well, by that time, he was really starting to seem more like another child than a monster. And I was feeling really sorry for him. And so I said, "Mom, he got hit in the face with a baseball." And she said, "That's terrible." She said, "You know, honey, he should be in heaven. Ask him why he didn't go to heaven." So I said, "Jimmy, my mommy wants to know, why didn't you go to heaven?" And he said, "Oh, I don't know how." So I said, "Mommy, Jimmy doesn't know how to go to heaven. What can we do?" Well, Mommy said, "Well, ask him if he was a good boy." So I said, "Jimmy, were you a good boy?" And he said, "Most of the time, but once my ball got away and it broke the neighbor's window. That's all." And I said, "Mommy, he said once he broke the neighbor's window with his ball, but usually he was a good boy." And my mom said, "Well, I think what we have to do is we have to pray for Jimmy to go to heaven." And she said, "Can Jimmy hear me?" And I asked him, I said, "Can you hear my mother?" And he said, "Well, I can see her and I can hear her, but she can't see me or hear me." And I said, "Mom, he can hear you." And she said, "Okay, Jimmy." She said, "Now, we're all going to pray for you to go to heaven." And she said, "You have to help us. You have to pray too." So I closed my eyes and bowed my head like I was told to do in Sunday school. And all three of us prayed for Jimmy to go to heaven. And I prayed, "Dear God, please let Jimmy go to heaven. He says he's been a good boy, and he's afraid of the dark. Please let him go to heaven." And I heard my mother and Jimmy praying too, and we prayed. Well, finally, I couldn't hear Jimmy's voice anymore, so I looked up, and I could see him starting to fade away. And he said, "I'm going now." So when he was gone, I told my mother, "Jimmy's gone." And she said, "Well, can you go to sleep now?" And I said, "I think so." I said, "I think Jimmy went to heaven." I had dinner with my mother last night. And, of course, we're both quite a bit older now, and her memory is fading quite a bit. But we started talking about old times and what I was like when I was a little girl. And I said, "Mom, do you remember when I used to see things that other people couldn't see?" And she kind of giggled, and she goes, "Yeah, you thought so."
Gonna be a bright sunshine day. It's gonna be a bright sunshine day. I think I can make it now. The pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Be a bright sunshine.
This week I've been remembering this wonderful patient. It's not necessarily a funny story, I guess, but this whole thing about Angelina Jolie having her double mastectomy. And this was many years ago. I was working in a hospital, and I had a lady who was one of my patients, and she also had a double mastectomy. She had to have it. And when you have that procedure, it's terribly invasive. At least it was years ago. It was terribly invasive, and she had drains and incisions and dressings. And this was a woman, this was a very sudden thing to her. She was in total shock. And the minute they come back from surgery, you have to start not only getting them over the shock and the trauma to the body of the surgery itself, but you have to start them looking at themselves, seeing their incision, because they're going to go home and take care of tubes and dressings, and they're going to have to take ownership of their body. And so it's a very intensive 3 days that they get to be in the hospital. And this woman was just in total denial. She was repulsed by her own body. She could not adapt and adjust. And she just had a struggle, an uphill struggle, trying to, every time I took even approached telling her taking the dressing off and trying to show her what the dressing was, she would burst in tears. She was miserable. And then she had a lot of pain too. So we worked through this. She finally got to a point where she was at least able to look at her chest and had taken the tubes apart and was able to manipulate everything and change her dressings and go home. And so I've been thinking about this patient, especially this week. But the end of the story is that about 6 months later, I'm sitting and charting in the nurse's station, and there was a wall, and the door where the nurses would come in to sit down and do their charting, it was a solid wood door. The wood was on the lower half of the door, and the upper half, there was this window. And I'm sitting there charting one night, and I look up, and there are two boobs staring right at me. And here is this woman. And she was flashing me with her boobs. And I got over my own shock, I got up and went out there, and she's standing in the middle of the hospital hallway, totally naked from the waist up, and she's showing me her new boobs, and she says, "I just had to come and show you how I look now." And she looked great, but then I had to say to her, "Would you please cover your chest?"
I can see all obstacles in my way. Gonna be a bright sunshine, yeah. Oh, it's gonna be a bright sunshine, yeah.
I first met Floris Mosley in April of 1999. Floris was my husband's great aunt, and she lived in Tupelo, Mississippi. This was my first trip to the South with my husband, and the first time that I would meet any of his relatives. I really didn't know what to think. But Floris put me immediately at ease. Floris was a wonderful person. She had so many different interests. She knew so much about history and genealogy. She loved to travel. She'd formerly been a seamstress and a tailor. She was the type of person who was so talented, she could look at a picture of a dress in a magazine, and then she could make a copy of it. She was always telling us stories about her daughter Josepha, who lived in San Francisco. Josepha was named for her deceased grandfather, and Floris loved her dearly and couldn't say enough wonderful things about her. In 2006, we decided that we needed to take a trip to Mississippi because Floris had been failing. Her health had failed tremendously. About 3 years prior to that, she had suffered a stroke, which left her bedridden and almost unable to communicate. So we knew that we needed to make the trip to see her, maybe for the last time. It was also the year after Katrina, and I've thought of New Orleans as my second home for many years. And for months and months, I've been telling my husband, I have to go. I have to go to New Orleans. I have to talk to the people, and I have to make sure everything's going to be okay. So I was very depressed and feeling down on our way down south that year. The second night, we arrived in Tupelo, and we had dinner at a restaurant with several of Dave's relatives. We decided to tell them about our plans to see Floris the next day, and we were discouraged. They were telling us, oh, no, don't go to see Floris because she will not recognize you. She will not respond. It'll just be depressing and a waste of time. The next morning, my husband decided that he didn't want to go to see Floris, and I said, no, I'm going to see Floris. I don't care if you go with me or if you stay in the parking lot, but I'm going in to see her. So I walked into Floris's room in the nursing home, and I noticed that she had a small bulletin board, and the only personal item she had in her room was on that bulletin board. It was a photograph of Dave and I that I'd sent to her a few years before. When we saw Floris, she was sleeping, and we could tell that her health had failed tremendously. So we were discussing whether we did want to stay or if we thought maybe we should leave. Well, suddenly, Floris's eyes flew open, and she smiled at us. She recognized us. She knew we were there, and she was happy. And we took hold of her hands. She tried to sit up in bed, and she tried to speak to us. It was like, she had to say something. But each of us took hold of one of her hands, and we told her, no, Floris, no, you don't have to try to talk. We know you can't talk. We're just happy that you know that we're here. And we talked to her for quite a long time, told her what we'd been doing, you know, that we were going down to New Orleans, and how happy we were to see her again. It was February of 2007 that we did lose Floris. And We went down to Mississippi right ahead of a snowstorm. There was a major snowstorm coming to Ames, but we did make it there. We did make it for the funeral. And there is no way that we would ever trade that last visit with her for anything, because we knew that she had seen us and recognized us, and she knew that we cared enough to make it down there to say goodbye to her. Thank you.
Summer's day, in everything that's light and gay, I'll always think of you that way. I'll find you in the morning sun, and when the night is new, I'll be looking at the moon. But I'll be seeing you.
Thank you for joining us around the table for Porch Stories, where we have just heard stories from your neighbors, Belinda Hagen Merritt and Sue Stanton. The music you heard today was I Can See Clearly Now by Johnny Nash and I'll Be Seeing You, sung by Michael Bublé. Our theme music is Home Sweet Home by the Brave Brothers. Porch Stories is a production of KHOI Radio and is broadcast Wednesday evenings at 9:30 p.m. These stories come from regular events held every month, and everyone is welcome to attend and share your stories. The next event is tomorrow evening, Thursday, August 29th. The theme will be, That Was Fun. Join us for a potluck and storytelling starting at 6:30 p.m. Porch Stories is made possible by a generous grant from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. KHOI is building community through communication. If you would like to tell a story, email khoiradio@gmail.com or phone 515-292-2878. See you next week.